You're listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Gemma Gaudette. Things got testy several times this week in the Idaho legislature as lawmakers and citizens debated Senate Bill 1159. This is the bill that would make it more difficult to get a citizens' initiative on the ballot here in Idaho. That's what happened with Medicaid expansion in November. Now, the Idaho House did pass the bill this morning. In fact, as you heard just in our last segment, happened about 20 minutes ago. Now, things got heated as Democrats, including Representative Matt Erpeldine, tried to kill this bill or at least slow it down. Dozens of citizens, four attorneys general, and a former secretary of state have come out against this bill. In fact, those former attorneys general saying this could potentially be unconstitutional. Minority Leader Matt Erpeldine is joining me live in the studio to update us on this. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
You have had a busy morning.
It has been a busy, it's been a busy 48 hours for sure.
So get us updated on really what has happened within the last 48 hours. For people that aren't aware of what Senate Bill 1159 is, this is the one where it would basically make it harder to get a citizen initiative on the ballot, correct?
Correct. This bill is essentially a Revenge on Voters Act. That's in direct response to the last election. And it has made it out of the Senate. And there's been process problems with this legislation the entire time. It was printed after the transmittal date, which is when we're supposed to have moved all of our major legislation from one side to the other. It was printed after the transmittal date. There were process problems on the Senate side with actually hearing the public speak and giving enough time for the public to speak. It barely passed the Senate, 18 to 17, and then it came over to the House. Initially, there were process problems in the House State Affairs Committee where the chairman was refusing to allow committee members to ask questions. We got that rectified. Then it came to the floor, and then yesterday the majority caucus went to a caucus. So they put the House at ease, went to a caucus. They were in caucus for an hour and a half. When they came out, they called a committee hearing in Ways and Means, printed what they're calling a trailer bill, and that was because they were afraid of sending the actual bill to general orders, because if they sent the bill to general orders, it would have had to go back to the Senate, and they were worried they'd lose votes on the Senate side because it passed on such a narrow margin.
Explain what a trailer bill is, because you're using terminology, frankly, that if you are not in the legislature or you are not a reporter covering this, a lot of people don't even know what any of this means.
Correct. I apologize. I know that.
So
there's two ways to change a bill. One way is to send it to the amending order where we go in and we kind of fix things that are broken. The other way is to just run a second bill behind the first highly, highly flawed bill with your desired fixes, the majority's desired fixes. And that's what a trailer bill is. So they realized they were losing a majority of their caucus because the public's outcry was so widespread and so bipartisan on this piece of legislation that what they did is they printed and are running a trailer bill. Now, what this trailer bill is takes it from 695% harder to like 250% harder. So
what did they change within that trailer bill?
What they changed in the trailer bill is they've taken it down to a supermajority of the legislative districts instead of a 92% majority of the legislative districts. So they cut it by 30%. And then the other thing is they allowed an additional 60 days for additional
signatures.
Yeah, for additional signatures. It might be a few more than 60 days. But nonetheless, what they did is they put lipstick on a pig and ran a bill that doesn't fix all the problems that are associated with the current one.
And talk to me about when they went behind closed doors yesterday, because there is some debate that this isn't okay.
You know, I think they walk a really fine line on this one. And unfortunately for the majority, the optics around this look really bad. They are a quorum when they go into caucus, and that caucus is secret. There's no notes on it. It's not open to the public. So we don't really know what the discussion is. But it's pretty strange for them to go to a caucus for an hour and a half, come out of a caucus, and immediately run this trailer bill. Mm-hmm. And that's the part that I think that they need to be more careful with. It's perfectly fine with me that they go and caucus and have conversations, but when they're caucusing about a single issue and they're specifically going at ease because of Senate Bill 1159 being up on the third reading calendar and needing to be voted on, it just whether there was any impropriety there, it doesn't look good.
Mm-hmm. And I do want to let listeners know that we've reached out in the past to the majority to come in and talk about Senate Bill 1159. They have graciously declined our invitations over time. So just want people to know that we are trying to look at this from all sides. So it did get a hearing, correct? Because there were citizens that spoke about this.
Well, that's actually my issue with this quote unquote trailer bill that they're running, is that bill did not receive a hearing. So the initial bill, which was draconian on every level, which most people knew was going to end up in the courts, was likely unconstitutional. And if it ended up not being unconstitutional, it effectively eliminated the initiative process in the state of Idaho, except for millionaires and billionaires who could buy one. But they run this second bill, and it has substantive changes. Yes, it makes it slightly easier. It goes from, like I said, 690% harder to 250% mm-hmm. harder. But they did not allow a hearing on that bill. That's the process that I'm greatly concerned with. It's a way to sidestep general orders, which also is using the darkness of night to amend a bill that was created in the darkness of night. But this is an even more straightforward way of saying this bill was created behind closed doors. It was created by a group of lobbyists, apparently, who wanted to tie up the initiative process. And now we're going to run a trailer bill without any public hearing on it. It's troubling.
And it has passed. So there will not be.
And it passed.
Any
yes.
hearing. So we spoke about this in our last segment just a bit. But these two bills will now go in front of Governor Little.
The House bill has to go back over to the Senate,
okay.
And what they do with the process over there is up to them. This thing's been fraught with process problems all along. My hope is that the senators take the letter of the rule seriously and follow the process exactly, because the bill needs a full hearing. The bill needs to allow people to have a conversation about it. And in most cases, you would have it on both sides of the House. The House decided not to do that. My hope is that the Senate doesn't.
And from there, since they have passed, where do we go from here? So we know the one has to go back. What about
the Senate Bill 1159 now goes in front of the governor, where he has the right to sign it, not sign it, or veto it. And the not sign part is the one that Governor Otter used to use on a regular basis, which was his way of saying, I really want to veto this, but I'm not basically brave enough to. So he would let laws go into effect without his signature on a regular basis. My hope is that Governor Little doesn't use that tool as much. He either signs the bill or vetoes the bill, mm-hmm. but he doesn't just let things go into law without his signature.
And we talked about this a little bit earlier on the program, is we don't know where Governor Little stands on this. He has not said anything about this. So A, we don't know that, but B, how is the voice of the people recognized in this when it goes to the governor's desk, and we will he listen to the voice of the people, I guess, is what we're all wondering.
You know, my hope is that he does. What the legislature has tried to do is essentially say that the ballot initiative process is comparable to the legislature, so therefore we're going to strict it to all these legislative districts. But the ballot initiative process is more comparable to a statewide election like you would see for the governor or any of the other executive positions, and that's where this gets really sticky. 61% of Idaho voted for Governor Little, if not more than that, and 61% voted for Medicaid. And so my hope is that he is listening to the will of the people. I've always felt that he's been a very objective person, and I hope he looks at this from an objective lens.
What's interesting about this as well is that you had the Democrats all against this. There were people from the legislators from the far right, as we said, Heather Scott, who was also opposed to this. We don't see that very often.
Correct.
In our legislature. How did that happen?
Well, it goes back to, you know, the history of how this ended up in our Constitution, and that's kind of what got us into a heated conversation today on the floor. And that is, in 1912, when this was added to our Constitution, it was at a time in United States history where our governments were quite corrupt. It was when we added the 17th Amendment, which gave the citizens the right to elect their federal senators. It was when we added the initiative process into certain states' constitutions because they were questioning whether or not the state and local governments were actually doing what they wanted to have done. It was called the progressive era. And when you look at why they were added, it was essentially because of corruption. And this constitutional right, whether you're on the far right, in the middle, or on the left of center, is a constitutional right, and it was put there for a reason. And I think that the reason that the far right was with us is because the far right Republicans are they often are literal interpreters of the Constitution, and we sometimes run afoul on those things. But for the most part, that's a place where we align on a regular basis on constitutional issues.
I want to thank you for coming in today. I know you've been busy. I appreciate the conversation, especially getting us updated, because this is just moving, it seems, minute by minute. So appreciate the conversation.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. I've been speaking with Representative Matt Erpelding about the changes to the Citizen Initiative Bill, that is Senate Bill 1159.